Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for another edition of the FantasyGuru.com show. And now, here's your host from FantasyGuru.com, John Hansen.
It is May 5th. The NFL draft is in the book, so it's time to break it down. Our post-draft podcast here at FantasyGuru.com. I'm John Hansen, and we'll be joined by Mr. Greg Cosell to break it all down. But first, a reminder. Now, today is Thursday, May 5th. We have our early bird special at FantasyGuru.com. For the last 18, 19 years, we end that May 1st. But honestly, we keep it open a little longer for the stragglers. And if you are one of those, if you've never subscribed, then you're thinking about it, $24.95 is a deal that cannot be beat. That's literally 20% cheaper than we charged in 1995. And as I said on the last podcast, still not ready to give away specifics, but we are completely redoing FantasyGuru.com. If you are a subscriber in the past and you're thinking about it for this year, maybe we convinced you to draft Ryan Tannehill and you're pissed. I'm telling you, the site in terms of the tools will literally be 100% better in 2016. Maybe even more. So FantasyGuru.com, early bird special. It's going to definitely be ending this week. And without any further ado, we bring in our man, Greg Cosell. Greg, good morning. What's up?
John, how are you?
Doing well. And we were talking off the air about this podcast, and now we can really get into it because we've got all the players on all the teams. We pretty much know what we're dealing with. So we're excited about this podcast, Greg.
Well, if we know what we're dealing with, John, that would be pretty good, because sometimes I'm not sure all the teams even know yet what they're dealing with, but we're better than that, right, John?
Well, you know, it's funny that it's a process. So we do this in May. You come into the office for a whole day. We go over everything. We follow the mini camps, the OTAs, training camp. And by August, we're like, we know everything. We're going to get everything right. It never happens that way. But I got to tell you, I do enjoy that feeling in July, August, where you're like, we're all over this. We know everything that's going to happen. We're not going to be wrong. We always are wrong, but I do like that feeling of, oh yeah, we got this. Let's start off in the AFC, Greg, and we'll review everything that happened in the draft and kind of frame everything. We'll start in the AFC East. Let's start with Miami, because that's a very interesting situation. Obviously, we know what happened with Laremy Tunsil, and it could be a huge coup for the Dolphins. Let's start on the O-line, Greg, because Tunsil's going to play guard. They've got Jermon Bushrod as a swing tackle. So now you're looking at Brandon Albert, Laremy Tunsil, Mike Pouncey, Billy Turner, and Juwan James. I know Juwan James at right tackle has been a problem, but that's four number one picks on the O-line, Greg. Can this actually be a strength for Miami with Adam Gase?
Could be. I mean, I'm real interested in the Tunsil at guard, because I don't really think he's a guard, but that's just me. I think he's purely a tackle, and obviously he'll play there in time, but right now they still have Brandon Albert. So it'll be interesting. I mean, you're right. They have four number ones, and actually Billy Turner was a number three, so he was thought of as an NFL starter as well. It's a pretty interesting group.
Let's just kind of go back in time and think about Tannehill. And look, I like Tannehill. I've said it on the site last year. Whenever I see a player entering his fourth year who's durable, athletic, has the talent, and who has gotten progressively better, I'm going to be all over that guy. I mean, I'm going to do
right.
It again. If there's a guy who fits that profile, I'm going to do it again. But that said, you know, when you think back at Tannehill, look, he's a flawed quarterback. I think that's fair to say. He needs to be in a right situation. When you think back at last year, and, you know, he didn't have Devontae Parker for much of the year. Jordan Cameron was worthless. I don't know how much of that you put on Tannehill. The coaching staff was a disaster. How much of the problems do you kind of pin on Tannehill? And then moving forward, knowing that Adam Gase is something of a quarterback whisperer. I think he's pretty damn good. You know, yes. I mean, basically, what are you thinking here with Tannehill? I got to tell you, I hate to say it, but I'm feeling pretty good because they also add, look, they add a couple of guys who may not do much, but Leonte Carew maybe can contribute a little bit out of Rutgers. Thomas Duarte, we were very intrigued by at tight end, and they also bring in a nifty change of pace in Kenyon Drake. Greg, basically, it all looks pretty good here for Tannehill.
I would agree, and I think the Carew pick is a very good pick. I think he fits the profile of your number two receiver. I think much of this depends on where Devontae Parker goes, and toward the end of last season, I think he showed some of the traits that they drafted him for as a first-round pick. We know what Jarvis Landry is in the slot. That's where he really needs to be. The big question now, and I know you've probably dealt with this and certainly talked about it, is Jay Ajayi. I mean, right now this is set up for him to be a feature back in whatever way Adam Gase feels a feature back is going to be used. But he's really that guy right now.
Absolutely. And let's talk about Ajayi, because in our pre-draft rookie report before the NFL draft in 2015, I guess before we knew the extent of his knee situation, we had him as our number two back behind Todd Gurley. And look, we're a fantasy site. We understand that it's all about versatility and the ability to get volume. And yeah, Jay Ajayi behind this old line, let's assume the line at least is decent. You know, you got Laramie Tunsil there at guard. You know, what can he do in Adam Gase's offense? I think he can be an 18-carry guy and catch 2, 3, 4 balls a game. And also talk about how you see Kenyon Drake fitting in as a change of pace.
Well, theoretically, in an Adam Gase offense, I would see Ajayi as being used the way a Matt Forte would be used, because Ajayi is a good receiver as well. Now, he's coming off a rookie season in which he played sporadically, but I think skill set-wise, he has those combination of skills. Kenyon Drake, on the other hand, to me, he's a package player. They wanted some explosiveness in their offense. They really did not have explosiveness in their offense. That's what they were lacking. So he's a package player. He won't play 30 or 35 snaps a game. He'll be used in specific packages, specific ways, but it just demanded explosiveness. Now, you mentioned Thomas Duarte. I was very, very surprised he lasted until the 7th round. I don't know the reason. I think that his skill set, to me, was very reminiscent of a Jordan Reed type skill set. And I think, because beyond Jordan Cameron, assuming he's healthy, again, Duarte gives them some explosiveness. I mean, he's not explosive in the way you think of a back or a wide receiver, but for the tight end position, sort of a hybrid tight end wide receiver, he does have the ability to stretch the field.
Final thought on Gase and Tannehill. Gase has really done a good job with quarterbacks and with offense. And we saw what he did last year with Jay Cutler. Really, really managed him well. He'll stretch you out vertically. He'll stretch you out horizontally. You know, this is very good for Tannehill. No more excuses.
I would
for
agree.
Tannehill. Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on.
I would agree.
That was good, man. Man, that's a lot on the Dolphins, but all worthy. Let's talk New England Patriots. They don't make a huge splash here in this draft. But they are the Patriots. We'll see about the quarterback situation. We'll start here. When they drafted Jacoby Brissett, that surprised me in round 3. And my first thought was, well, he's never going to play for the Patriots. But maybe you disagree. Yeah. I mean, they do certainly have Jimmy Garoppolo. But what do you think the thought process was with taking Brissett that high at 91 overall?
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, I like Brissett, and I think I told you that I thought he'd get into day two. So he did. Yeah. It's just Brissett is not a quarterback that fits what they presently do, where clearly Brady plays a certain way. I think Garoppolo can play the way Brady plays stylistically and tactically. Brissett's not that guy. So it was obviously a player they really like, or they would not have taken him in the 3rd round. But you know Belichick, and Brissett's not going to play this year. I mean, assuming Brady does have to sit 4 games, Garoppolo, barring injury, will be the starting quarterback for those 4 games. But Brissett's a different kind of quarterback. But Belichick is never beholden to one philosophy. If they really like Jacoby Brissett, and by the way, he was as physically talented as any quarterback in this draft, if you just look at physical talents, you know, Brissett is a guy they may look at 2, 3 years down the road.
Let's talk about the wideout they drafted, Malcolm Mitchell. Now, he's a guy who's got the speed to get on top of a defense, second gear and all that. That's something that the New England Patriots have never had. But we know from past history that I think we can call him a project. Any thoughts on Malcolm Mitchell here in New England?
Yeah, I like Malcolm Mitchell a lot coming out of Georgia. I think he has potential game-changing ability and impact ability. But the issue you face with this offense is there's so much work that's involved because there's so many adjustments at the line of scrimmage and then after the ball is snapped. And that's a major learning curve that takes layers of learning that Mitchell, who's very, very smart, but still it takes time. So I think for this year, he's another guy that, assuming he does well through camp, would be a package player. He'd play specific plays, specific snaps. But I would not expect Malcolm Mitchell from a fantasy standpoint, John, to be a big guy this year.
Yeah, let's talk Buffalo. Not a ton going on here for the Bills. They addressed defense. They had some losses there at linebacker. They had a lot of defensive front issues. But you know what? We'll start with Cardale Jones. It was interesting. If you recall in the pre-draft podcast, I was like, you know, well, what about if he can sit for like 4 years like Tyrod Taylor? And ironically, he now plays with Tyrod Taylor. I mean, it feels like the Bills are just kind of – you know, throwing a dart there and hoping that Cardale can kind of stick in 2-3 years.
Well, look, the feeling is, and I'm sure we discussed this, is if you're going to draft a quarterback on the third day, a lot of teams feel, let's draft a quarterback who has a really good skill set, or let's put it this way, has certain skills as opposed to a guy that doesn't. So instead of drafting, you know, let's say a Brandon Allen from Arkansas who's, you know, under 6'2", and even though he knows how to play and all those things, let's not take him. Let's take a guy like Cardale Jones with a power arm, running ability, and if he does develop, hey, we've got something. To me, the most interesting pick they made, and I'm sure you can guess right now, was Jonathan Williams of Arkansas in the fifth round, because LeSean McCoy is getting older. He was hurt last year. I guess the off-the-field stuff has been cleared up. I don't know. We don't know. But he's certainly getting older. Carlos Williams, to me, is a compliment. He's not a feature back. And I think Jonathan Williams was as good a runner as there was in this class, including Ezekiel Elliott. So they drafted him in the fifth round, and this is Greg Roman. And it's a run-first team. And they run out of base personnel and base formations, and that's what Jonathan Williams did at Arkansas.
Williams did a heck of a job as a receiver last year. I saw a couple of moments where I was like, wow.
Carlos Williams you're talking about.
Yes.
And, yes. I'm talking, yeah.
So is that why is it that you think that he's a compliment? You were not impressed much with his
– I don't think he has enough running skill to be a foundation back. I think in a Greg Roman offense, there's definitely – a meaningful place for Carlos Williams. He's a big back and a downhill back, and he can run the power scheme, which Greg Roman features. But his overall running skill set, he does not have the running skill set of Jonathan Williams.
Yeah, who could be, let's say, the presumed starter maybe at latest 2 years from now. We could be looking at Jonathan Williams as the presumed starter, maybe even a little sooner if McCoy has more injury issues. The other pick of note was Colby Lissenby. And Greg, this makes a ton of sense, a vertical threat. And that's really, to me, probably one of the best things that Tyrod Taylor did was throw the deep ball. So that pick made a lot of sense.
Yeah, and plus the way they play on offense with a lot of base formations and base personnel, they get a lot of single high safety, so they get those matchups on the perimeter where, look, how many times last year, over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks of the season did he hit Sammy Watkins on deep balls? So this offense works to throw the ball down the field on the outside.
Moving along here on the FantasyGuru.com podcast, and we're doing the AFC East first here. We're up to the New York Jets. Not a ton going on here. And obviously we need to see about Ryan Fitzpatrick. But obviously, well, I say not a ton going on here. Well, maybe not for 2016, but the big pick was Christian Hackenberg, 51 overall. And just on the surface, you're like, what the hell are they doing? Because, you know, Chan Gailey likes to spread the defense with multiple receivers. It's basically a spread offense. However, Greg, as you likely know, you know, Chan Gailey is very adaptable. So that's what I have to think. They must have liked Hackenberg And they were like, okay, we're going to take him. And if he plays, we're not going to run the same offense we ran in 2015.
Well, I can only tell you what I think of Hackenberg, and I see him as an under-center play-action type quarterback where you max pro and you throw the ball at the intermediate and deeper levels. That's the way I see Christian Hackenberg. I don't see him as a spread quarterback. Now, they may see it differently. Ryan Fitzpatrick, who knows? I mean, the Jets made a pretty big statement by drafting Hackenberg with the 51st pick in the draft in the second round. They still have Geno Smith, who was also a second-round pick. I have no idea where Bryce Petty stands. I don't think he factors in right now. But, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, the ball is in his court. You know, a lot of people are just assuming, oh, he'll be back. Well, you know, maybe he will, maybe he won't. Right now, he has zero leverage. So he would have to come back probably almost on a one-year deal at this point. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think Hackenberg does not fit, in my view, what the Jets did last year in style of offense.
Yeah, and Hackenberg and Bryce Petty are very different quarterbacks. So I felt like when you drafted Hackenberg, that's kind of not good. Not good for Bryce Petty at all. Any thoughts on Sherron Peak, who was only a seventh round pick?
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, I didn't love him on tape, and I was not surprised where he was drafted. I think he's more of a possession guy. I mean, it's very funny because that the Jets drafted him, because if I'm not mistaken, when I finished my notes on Sherron Peak, I think I said that if you really like Sherron Peak, his ceiling would be an Eric Decker kind of player.
Yeah, size and some movement. Okay, there's the New York Jets. Let's move on to the AFC North. We'll go now to the Baltimore Ravens. And, you know, it was funny, after they took Ronnie Stanley, Ozzie Newsome on the phone with him actually asked Stanley, did I make the right pick? And I felt like they were really deliberating on Laremy Tunsil, but they're so big on character and all that. Maybe compare and contrast Ronnie Stanley and Laremy Tunsil, and do you think the Ravens may have passed up on a potential superstar in Tunsil?
Well, I like Tunsil more as a prospect, but Stanley I like as well, and I made a point watching both guys that I think both were better prospects than the tackles of the last 3-4 years who've come out at the left tackle position who've not necessarily fared really well. So Ronnie Stanley, to me, is a very, very good prospect. And I think if he plays to his ceiling, then there'll be no issues and we won't be discussing Laremy Tunsil as far as the Ravens are concerned.
Gotcha. And then in the backfield, it's very confusing because we were very high on Kenneth Dixon. I know you were too. You did have some questions about the size, the lack thereof, a little skinny. And now he lands in a pretty crowded backfield. But in your mind, how does Dixon stack up with a Justin Forsett, similar player actually, and also a Buck Allen? What are your thoughts on how he can move into this backfield quickly and be a factor?
You know, I'm wondering really if they see him more as just a receiver at this point. You know, I'm not sure that they see him maybe down the road. I mean, he is 215 pounds, and there's a lot of people who don't see him as a feature-type back. They see him more as a complement, but I think right now that's how he fits. I mean, you're right. It's a somewhat crowded backfield. They still have Buck Allen. You know, so I like the pick of Dixon because I like the player, and I think ultimately Justin Forsett will not have many years left. And Buck Allen, I think there's a question as to whether he can be sort of a feature type back. And don't forget, with Mark Trestman, I think in an ideal world, and look, they've really added a lot of receivers here. So in an ideal world, to me, Mark Trestman is a passing coordinator more than a running coordinator. So whoever the back is, I'm not sure this is in an ideal world, a 22, 23 carry a back kind of guy. You know, I don't think that's the way they want to play ultimately.
Sure. Forsett is 30. He signed a 2-year deal last year. So he's in the final year of his deal. If we fast forward a year,
I would bet he's not there.
Right. So you got to give Dixon the edge though. I mean, if it's a pass oriented offense, fine. You know, give the kid 13, 14 carries a game and he catches four or five balls. I mean,
well,
he does kind of stand out over Buck Allen, overall.
Great point. And assuming that they have a better year this year and all the coaching staff is intact, then you have Dixon and Allen, and that's not a bad combination.
Did you like Chris Moore, the vertical receiver out of Cincinnati?
Yeah, I did. Certainly... I did. I think he's got a chance. You know, look what this team has done, okay? Steve Smith is coming back, but we don't know. It's hard to know. But they brought in Mike Wallace, and Mike Wallace is a compliment. Mike Wallace is not a number one, but he won't be asked to be. Perriman should be back, and he has the skill set to be a true number one. We have no idea because he didn't play, but he has that skill set. They bring in Chris Moore, another guy that has vertical ability and can run. And then look what their tight end situation is. They brought in Benjamin Watson, coming off his best year as a receiver in New Orleans. Max Williams, second year, he's a receiver as well. Crockett Gilmore, I thought, actually played very well when forced to be essentially the number one tight end last year. So now they've built a lot of weapons around Joe Flacco.
Yeah, myriad weapons. I've never been higher on Flacco than I am this year for fantasy, especially when you compare it to what they were working with last year. I mean, you could argue their receiving corps is literally 300% better in 2016.
And you know what? And Kamar Aiken, say what you want, but he did have 75 catches for almost 1,000 yards. And while no one is going to talk about him being a top 10 receiver, that kind of receiver, sort of that possession guy who, you know, that guy is important to have on your roster.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the Cincinnati Bengals as we move along in the fantasyguru.com post-draft podcast. And boy, we really loved the pick of Tyler Boyd. I felt like that was a slam dunk once they didn't get the, you know, a guy like Doxson. Your thoughts on Tyler Boyd? Not a flashy guy at all, but you know what? They've got flashy guys in A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert. I thought Tyler Boyd was a perfect pick and kind of a plug-and-play number two wide receiver for the Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got size, strong hands. He can play outside. He can play in the slot. He works the middle of the field. He made tough catches in traffic. He has body control. He had showed a physical presence. I like Tyler Boyd, and I think he needed to be on a team with a big-time number one, and he is. So that pick makes perfect sense. The other player who I think is worth watching this year for this team is Tyler Kroft, the second tight end. Because he came out of Rutgers last year as a third-round pick, and I very much liked him. I thought there were some similarities in his movement to Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce.
And
wow.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Eifert is obviously a big-time tight end. We know that. But this team likes to play multiple personnel packages. They play with two tight ends quite a bit. So you have Tyler Eifert, Tyler Kroft. And the one other thing I would expect Jeremy Hill to have a bounce-back season. I really would. I think he's talented. And I think that they'll continue with Kenny Sampisi there. Obviously, Hugh Jackson's gone, but Kenny's been there a long time. He'll probably tweak some things now that he's in charge. But I don't think you'll see this offense be dramatically different.
Yeah, and I would think maybe they're inclined to run it just a little bit more as they transition away from Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu and you work in a rookie wide receiver. So I would agree. I was disappointed in Jeremy Hill, but I think he'll get probably 2 to 3 more carries a game this coming year.
And he is talented, and we know that. So, you know, I would agree with you on that.
Let's talk about the Cleveland Browns. And okay, so Hugh Jackson and the organization have basically said, well, you got to trust us with Cody Kessler. They take him in the third round, 93 overall. We're scratching our heads still in the office, Greg. Don't think he would have been taken off the board until, maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, at least a round later. But here's the problem, and we've encountered this over the years. You got RG3, and now you draft Kessler. You call it an open competition. You're not ruling out starting Kessler. But aren't Kessler and RG3 completely different players who you would cater the offense differently toward?
Theoretically, no. At this point, RG3 is not the RG3, in order to play, is going to have to play from the pocket now. So they're teaching him. He's a reclamation project. Look, reasonable people, John, disagree about the evaluation of players. I watched a lot of Cody Kessler. I even watched games from last year. I watched this year. He's played in multiple systems at USC. He's been effective in all the systems he's played in. He's not particularly talented, but I don't know who made the pick, but could you, Jackson, ultimately see him, if he were to play to his highest ceiling, could he see him as an Andy Dalton-type player? I think Dalton is more talented as a passer, and Dalton's still not a high-level passer, but, you know, could he see some Andy Dalton, Cody Kessler, within the framework of his offense? That's the only way I can think about it. Like I said, I did not really like Cody Kessler. To me, he's an NFL backup. He kind of reminded me of Aaron Murray coming out of Georgia. That's the way I saw him. But again, you know, they made the pick. I think they felt that he was, because they didn't draft Connor Cook, I think they felt that he was probably up at the higher level of their second tier of quarterbacks, and that's okay. They made the pick. The one player I think is fascinating because of the receivers coach there, Al Saunders. I would not be surprised if Al Saunders saw a little Isaac Bruce and Corey Coleman, and I think that's the way he'll coach him. I think he has that. He's about that size. He's got that kind of movement. I think he probably saw a little Isaac Bruce and Corey Coleman.
You would not classify Corey Coleman as a one-trick pony, correct? I mean, he had a boatload of touchdowns.
Yeah, no, not the way I would Will Fuller, for instance. Exactly. No, I think Corey Coleman has much more to him than that. He'll need a lot of work. Al Saunders is as tough and as good a wide receivers coach as there is in this league, and I think that he'll work him really hard. And from what I understand, Coleman, you know, is coachable. Don't know the kid, but that's what I've heard. You know, I think he's not a one-trick pony if he were to reach his potential.
Of course, we do know about those Baylor wide receivers and running a limited route tree, and a little scary for fantasy purposes for me this year. I'm not going to
– Right.
I don't expect to be very high on Corey Coleman. They also drafted 17 other wide receivers, Greg, maybe a few fewer than that. But Ricardo Lewis in the fourth out of Auburn.
Correct.
Jordan Payton out of UCLA. Rashard Higgins kind of is intriguing. Colorado State. Of those three, anyone jump out as like, okay, that's the guy I want to watch this year?
You know, I liked Rashard Higgins a bit from Colorado State. You know, I thought to me, and again, it's interesting they drafted him. I made a note that I thought he transitions best as a complementary outside receiver like a Marvin Jones. That was a note I made. So it's interesting that Hugh Jackson, who had Marvin Jones, would draft Rashard Higgins. To be honest, I was not a big fan of Jordan Payton at UCLA. I watched a lot of games, and I just really struggled with his ability to win versus man coverage. He's a big kid. He ran well at the combine, but he does not play like that. So he was not someone I particularly liked on film, and that's the only way I can judge. Ricardo Lewis, to me, he's a size-speed prospect who needs work in the details of route running. I thought that in some ways he was similar to Chris Moore with his straight-line speed, but the question is, can he become a big-play outside receiver in the NFL? That's what he projects at this point, but it'll be a process.
Good stuff there. Let's continue on here, and we need to talk about who do we miss? Oh, Pittsburgh. Not a ton going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and obviously they've got some other issues with Martavis Bryant and the like. I mean, really, I guess they went all in on the defense, and that defense did surprise me a little bit last year. Where are you right now with the Steeler D? Is this an average unit yet, or is it still below average?
Well, you know, it's tough to say. Look, they went in on D, their first two picks. Artie Burns, to me, at corner, has a lot of traits that you look for, but at this point, I didn't think he was a very good player. Now, they drafted the traits. Sean Davis played both corner and safety at Maryland. He'll be a safety for them. They would like him to be their starting strong safety. On the offensive side of the ball, where do you stand on Sammy Coates? Because I think ultimately they would like him to replace Martavis Bryant this season.
Well, he's intriguing, but they did re-sign Darius Haywood Bey, and we laugh at Darius Haywood Bey, but they like him. You know, he's probably good in the locker room and all that. And then Wheaton is a frustration. So I'm kind of viewing the number two receiver spot as kind of a shared thing. And I think there'll be weeks where Wheaton does well. Darius Haywood Bey will take some shots to him. So I'm not expecting Coates to catch a ton of balls, but of the three, I'm most intrigued because at least with Coates, you know, we're kind of disappointed with Wheaton. He's had opportunities. Coates, whenever he's gotten on the field, it's been few and far between in terms of the snaps, he's actually made some plays. So I'm most intrigued by him, but I'm not expecting big numbers.
Yeah, I thought Wheaton came on a bit toward the end of last season, so I'm very anxious to see what he does this year with Brian out. And Coates, I think they would like to replace Brian. He was a third-round pick. He's got theoretically a similar kind of skill set in that he has vertical ability.
Yeah. I'm just a little bit enamored with Martavis Bryant. I find it hard to kind of bail from that kid. And then I think with Wheaton, too, it's like, remember that Seattle game? Like, I just feel like he made some great plays playing against defenses, scared to death of Antonio Brown, and also scared to death of Martavis Bryant. And he took advantage of some good matchups. And maybe he doesn't get those this year with Brian out, but we'll see. He certainly has flashed a little bit. Let's talk Houston over in the AFC South. And, you know, this was a really interesting draft for the Texans on the heels of picking up Brock Osweiler. And you look at the roster last year, Greg, once Foster went down, oh boy, other than Hopkins, nothing, no playmakers, no speed. Well, that's no longer the case. They did reach, I thought, on Will Fuller. I think they were praying Corey Coleman came to them at 21 overall. That didn't happen. So they still go out and get the speed in Will Fuller. We know about the sloppy hands and the inability to track down the deep ball and all that, but the kid can fly. An intriguing puzzle piece in Braxton Miller, who may not play much at all, but, you know, maybe he's like a Percy Harvin by the end of the year, Percy Harvin's rookie year. Tyler Irvin, some speed here. Your thoughts on those three skill players fitting into the Texan offense?
Well, this is the best kind of place for Fuller, who, again, is not a number one because he doesn't have enough dimensions. Miller is the intriguing player here because when you draft him in the third round, like you said, this year he's not going to play a ton of snaps. He'll be a package guy. But you don't draft a guy in the third round just to be a package guy as you look at his career. So maybe they're thinking he can become sort of a Randall Cobb type player down the road. I really like the pick of Tyler Irvin because I like the player a lot on tape. And I think that he, even though he's 192 pounds, I think in a complementary role, he can also be a runner in this running offense because he ran out of the I formation in college. So he's not just a spread back. So to me, the most intriguing pick is Tyler Irvin, and I really like the player.
Good stuff there. Indy, not much, but how about the Colts not drafting a running back? I was shocked with that one. They were all in on the O-line. Now, they did pick up a kid out of Illinois and Josh Ferguson as an undrafted free agent, but
he's a Darren Sproles type. Yeah.
Looks like that it's all Frank Gore yet again, and Frank Gore is going to be.
You know, it's funny you say that because Gore carried 260 times last year, which a lot of people might not be aware of because it didn't seem like that as you watch the season. But he carried more last year than he did the year before in San Francisco, which, you know, like I said, I think that would be surprising to a lot of people. And again, now you get into the discussion of where Frank Gore stands. I thought watching him run last year, I thought he still looked pretty good. You know, their O-line was obviously not very good, and they obviously addressed that big time. So Frank Gore is going to be the guy.
Well, and I like Frank Gore a lot last year, and a lot of subscribers drafted him. And look, I apologize for that because he didn't really come through all that well. But, you know, I had him at 10 at running back. He finished 14th. So imagine if they weren't a catastrophe on offense, just imagine what Frank Gore probably would have done. He probably would have had 10 touchdowns for about 1,150 yards and caught about 45 balls. He would have done exactly as I said. So that's good that too, especially early, Greg, he had a couple. He had the ugly fumble at the goal line, but then there was a two or three game period where they actually were, you know, running the offense pretty well. I thought Frank Gore looked very good. Forget about decent. I thought he looked really good. So All right, there you go. But not much otherwise here. Any thoughts on the state of this O-line now? I mean, they invested a bunch of picks. Obviously, Kelly, their number one pick, will plug and play, and that's Costanzo and Kelly. Now, at least you got a couple of, you know, number one picks here. But you, Thornton at guard, Harrison at guard, Mehord at the tackle there. I mean, this is still a below average O-line, though, at the end of the day, Greg, isn't it?
Well, I guess they're counting on the rookies. Kelly is plug and play. They actually drafted a center out of Iowa in the 7th round named Austin Blythe, who I really, really liked on film. He's a little undersized. I think, to me, it's interesting whether he could end up starting at center and Kelly could easily play guard. I think Kelly is plug and play at center or guard, personally. I think he's a terrific center, and that might be the plan right now, but we'll see what happens. But look, they drafted 4 offensive linemen, so they're looking, you know, I think they want to play differently. They have a new coordinator, too, in Chudzinski. I think you're going to see them try to protect Luck a little, not have as many deep drops, not have him sit in the pocket as much. I think they're going to change up a little bit here.
Yeah, and no Kobe Fleener, and, you know, we always know Rob Chudzinski is a former tight ends coach and all that. Dwayne Allen, what are your thoughts on him in a prominent role? He's been a pretty good blocker for them over the years. What are your thoughts on Dwayne Allen in this offense in, let's say it, a prominent role?
I think it will be a prominent role. I think Chudzinski uses the tight ends really effectively. And I think Allen, to me, you know, you could argue he's like a Heath Miller, you know, the kind of guy that's a very good short to intermediate receiver, good blocker. I think that he'll factor a great deal into this. And I think that, you know, Dante Moncrief now becomes arguably, I don't want to say they're number one because Hilton obviously puts up numbers, certainly for fantasy, but I think Moncrief now has to be another guy. He's got size. He can run after catch. I think they'll do a lot more of that kind of work in their offense. Shorter throws, try to get run after catch. And Dorsett will be back, and he can run.
Yeah. Oh, you were all over Moncrief 3 years ago, and that's why we pay the big bucks. I mean, we unearthed that kid his rookie season.
Yeah, I really liked him coming out, and he didn't get a lot of love from other people, and I just thought the skill set was there. And, you know, I'm always interesting, just to go a very quick tangent, I know we want to keep moving, is when I hear people say, and we all say it, okay, so I'm not immune from this, but when people say, well, you know, he didn't run a full route tree, well, you know, very few college receivers do that. They get taught how to do that. So, you know, to say that to me is not a knock on a player, because very few college guys do that.
Plus, it's not easy to look at a receiver, even watching the tape, correct me if I'm wrong, and say, oh, he's a great route runner. That's actually not an easy thing to pick up, correct? I mean, that's
it's not, unless he does run a lot of different routes, and not many college guys do. So, yeah. You know, but that doesn't mean they can't play.
Well, with Moncrief, I mean, you nailed that because, you know, like you said, a lot of people weren't giving him love, but you projected it out, and that projection was totally held true to form. Moving on to the Jaguars here, we're not going to talk offense here because they're pretty set here, but boy, you could argue, Greg, if all these guys are healthy, talking Dante Fowler, Miles Jack, and Jalen Ramsey, I mean, you could argue, Greg, they've added 3 of the top 5 picks of the draft. Talent-wise.
Yeah, and you know, like you mentioned Fowler, who I thought was the best defensive prospect coming out a year ago. He's back. They signed Malik Jackson. They signed Tashawn Gibson, who's a very good free safety. And that's the way they play, with a free safety, and he's that guy. I mean, this is a really good defense. Now you have Miles Jack and Telvin Smith with Posluszny inside, very good linebacking core. I mean, all of a sudden, they've got players on. I mean, right now, you've got, even when you look at just D-line depth, you've got Jared Odrick there, who, you know, might not even be a starter. I mean, Sendarek Marks, I know he's been hurt a lot, but he's actually a very good player as well.
Yeah, and Telvin Smith's probably one of the best linebackers that no one's ever heard of as well for the Jaguars. And well, I guess it's fair to say, and look, Gus Bradley, I've never met him, but I've been around him, and the dude's charismatic, but and we're rooting for him. I mean, the guy's always got a smile on his face, but if they go 6-10 this year, I mean, that's it. I mean, no more excuses.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. They've, you know, we don't need to go over their offense, like you say, but their offense is pretty good right now at this point, and their defense has really taken a step up in terms of personnel.
Let's talk Tennessee Titans, and obviously the big splash move here was, well, they take the tackle Conklin, which is probably good for their running game because he's a huge road grader. I don't know about his pass pro, which is fine for DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. So it's ironic that Henry's got a little Murray in him. Murray is a much better receiver, but compare and contrast Henry, and what do you think the approach is? And Henry, a volume back, not going to get the volume, but I can see, Greg, I could see them going into a game, all right, two series for Murray and then one for Henry, and then move it forward like that. Your thoughts?
Well, they drafted with a plan in place. They want to become a physical offensive team that starts with the run. That's why they traded up for Jack Conklin. And they now have two backs who are essentially very similar stylistically. And they're going to be a power physical running team. I would think in terms of Michael Turner with the Falcons when Mike Mularkey was there. Okay, and that's when he had Matt Ryan early in his career. He has Marcus Mariota. The one thing that Mariota gives you that Ryan didn't was he gives you more movement. So, but I think the core foundation of this team is going to be the run game, and they drafted for that. And that's how they want this team. They want it to be an attitude offense. They're going to come out, and they're going to hit you in the mouth, and they're going to run the ball. And that's why they drafted Derrick Henry in the second round.
When you look at the O-line, very underwhelming last year. So Lawan, hoping that they drafted Tunsil and they could move Lawan to right. Patassi, Schwenke, Chance Warmack is such a buzzkill to me. Number one pick several years ago, and now Conklin. What do you think of this O-line as it stands now?
Well, the point is it's
Ben
still
Jones too added.
By nature, it's still a physical O-line.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, ultimately, Lawan, they wanted to keep him a left tackle because he never really played right tackle. And Putachi, they tried it right tackle last year. It didn't work. They're going to move him inside to guard where most people think he's best. So they're trying to build a physical O-line. That's what they're trying to do. And Warmack is still that kind of player. He hasn't been good enough, but that's the kind of player he is.
Denver Broncos make the move, and Greg, I would argue that this was the best landing spot possible for Paxton Lynch. Yeah, I mean, Greg, I really think so because, you know, you've got the weaponry there. You've got an offense. Look, you got John Elway as your GM, and you've got Gary Kubiak as your coach. Those are a couple of quarterbacks right there. And you've got an offense that's built on the run, play action, bootlegging, and that is going to – When you run that offense and you do a designed bootleg, that kind of defines everything for you, doesn't it? And that's what Kubiak does. You chuck the ball down the field, and Paxton Lynch has a cannon.
Yeah, the beauty of this offense is in its simplicity. In some ways, it's very reminiscent of, let's say, a Joe Gibbs back in the early 80s. Not a lot of plays, but really efficiently executed. That's a Gary Kubiak offense. Now, the issue for Lynch, and again, different people have different views on this, John, but he's now going to have to play under center, which he's not done a lot of. He's now going to have to turn his back to the defense, which he's not done a lot of, if any. And these are layers of learning again. So we can't sit here and say that, oh, it's going to be fine, but they obviously traded back into the first round to get him. They would like him to play as soon as possible. We know what Mark Sanchez is. They know what Mark Sanchez is. So, you know, Paxton Lynch will be the guy. It just depends on how quickly he can master some of these things, how long the process takes.
Yeah, I was taking a little bit more of a long view on him. You're right. I mean, obviously, he'd be best off in a spread that is in the shotgun all the time, but that's unrealistic. I just felt like assuming he was going to have a big learning curve and play under center, this is as good a spot as you can find. And we'll see if he plays at all this year. I would imagine he will. I think he will.
And the guy I wouldn't fall asleep on is Devontae Booker, their fourth-round pick. Now, I did not love him coming out, but that's irrelevant. They drafted him for a reason. They want to run the ball. He's an inside runner. He's a sustainer. And that's what this offense is. And then, yes, they re-signed C.J. Anderson. And I think in an ideal world, they re-signed him good – pretty good money, so he's going to get the first shot, but he's certainly been up and down. And Devontae Booker is the style of back that fits a Gary Kubiak offense.
Yeah, we didn't like him either. We had some issues with him. He was a fumbler, some pass pro issues as well. Maybe didn't always – a lot of the things, you know, he did in college were based on sheer athletic ability as opposed to understanding the nuances of the position. I don't know if you agree with that one, but that was our take on him. So we didn't love him, but, you know, they take him, and we'll see. It's competition for C.J. Anderson, that's for sure, but we're not ready to say – that C.J. Anderson screwed. Let's just say it that way. Moving on to the – go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but I think he fits their style.
Okay. That's a fair point. Fair point. Not much going on here with the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of fantasy. They go D-tackle. They go cornerback. They go O-line. DeMarcus Robinson, though, is pretty intriguing. He's got some off-the-field issues, but – pretty damn talented, 6'1", 203 out of Florida. Would you say he's a better prospect than Chris Conley, who got on the field a ton last year, didn't really do much?
Yeah, I would. And I think, you know, DeMarcus Robinson to me, and again, he had the four suspensions, but without the off-field issues, I thought he might be a top five or six receiving prospect in this draft class. And that he, obviously that's why he got drafted where he did, because of the issues. But I think that he's got impact playmaker traits as an outside the numbers receiver. He's got size, length, athleticism, explosion, run after catch. I think he's got everything you look for. I couldn't begin to tell you one thing about the kid, but four suspensions is not a good thing.
I believe some of them were marijuana related. I don't want to underscore that, but you know, that's not like really horrible stuff. Of course, I guess it is for Josh Gordon in a way. They also drafted Kevin Hogan. They're just loading up on these great backup types. Now they got Hogan, they got Aaron Murray along with Alex Smith. I still am intrigued by Tyler Bray. Remember Tyler Bray? He's still on the roster, right?
Oh yeah, from Tennessee.
Kid's got an arm.
Yeah.
Moving on here, not a ton going on here with some of these teams in the AFC South and also the West as we talk. Oakland Raiders, not a ton for fantasy, but they did draft a running back. I thought, Greg, that they would have used an earlier pick, been a little bit more proactive on upgrading in the backfield, but they only use a fifth-round pick on DeAndre Washington, which I – would take as something of an endorsement for Latavius. But that said, as you know, likely, Greg, DeAndre Washington was arguably the most accomplished receiver in this class. So he should be able to get on the field. He's a rookie, but your thoughts on how they can work DeAndre Washington into the offense along with Latavius Murray?
Well, he turned out to be one of my most favorite players to watch on tape. He's 5'8", but he's 204 pounds. And he ran with toughness and competitiveness. He's got some wiggle. He's got contact balance. He maximized yards on every run. I really liked the player on tape. And I actually think it's a really interesting pick. And assuming he can pick up what they do and pass protection becomes critical, he was willing in pass protection. I thought there were times he showed the ability to recognize blitz. He showed some awareness of fronts. If he can do all that, I think he's going to play. And again, we can't say how much, but I think he's going to get on the field.
Is he big enough to maybe even challenge Murray for the lead role in second half of the season?
I mean, he's 5'8", but he's 204. So, you know, obviously he's built really low to the ground, you know, with kind of like a big ass, big thighs. When I mean that in a good way. I mean, he's not too big, but he's strong. And, you know, I thought he caught the ball really well. He was one of the toughest runners in this draft class just for his size. So I think the back is really, really a good prospect. It's just that he's – look, if this kid was, you know, 15 pounds heavier, we'd be having a different conversation, but he's not. But I think he's a really good prospect.
We'll talk Connor Cook at another date because he's not going to be quite very impactful for
no, he's not the starter.
For 2016. Yeah, it was an interesting pick, though. Maybe it's trade bait down the line. And also protection, being that they're ready to win now, if Carr does go down, you do have a pretty good backup there.
The Dallas Cowboys, Dallas Cowboys syndrome, you know? You don't want to lose your starting quarterback and have a really good team that you're building go right down the tubes.
There you go. San Diego Chargers take Hunter Henry. I think this is a real nice spot, Greg, and you can learn from one of the best of all time for a year or two. But I also think Hunter Henry may help them right away. They did draft or pick up in free agency Jeff Cumberland, but you know, your thoughts on Hunter Henry as a tight end too and a contributor this year?
Well, Phillip Rivers already came out and said he's going to have to be impactful. They play a lot of two tight end sets. He's going to be the second tight end behind Antonio Gates. And, you know, Henry was not a great blocker at Arkansas, even though they ran the ball an awful lot in base personnel and base formations. He's a very smooth receiver. So I think he's going to get meaningful snaps. He's going to be on the field.
The fantasyguru.com post-draft. Go ahead, Greg.
I was just going to add one other thing. If he's truly not ready, a guy I've always really liked who's there now is Jeff Cumberland. And I'd be really curious if he has any role in this offense, because other than Travis Benjamin on the outside, and he may not be a 65-snap-a-game player, they don't really have any explosiveness. And Jeff Cumberland, skill set-wise, is kind of a hybrid. So I'd be real curious to see if he can fit at all here.
Yeah, he's pretty athletic. He's kind of a complete tight end. He's always been underrated. We kind of look at the name. We used to call him Jeff Cumberland Farms, and we kind of laugh about it, but he's actually not that bad. And last year with the Jets, not really his fault. Not really his fault. They just don't use the tight end in that offense. Let's move on here in the fantasyguru.com post-draft podcast with Greg Cosell. I'm John Hansen to the NFC East. Let's start obviously in Dallas, and we've got, you know, I'm doing my keeper rankings, Greg, and you know, I know you're a big keeper guy, but just to frame it, I ranked Ezekiel Elliott at running back for the next 2 to 3 years at 2. Just behind Todd Gurley. And the only thought process there in terms of ranking him behind Gurley is because, well, in 3 years, Gurley is going to have a pretty good quarterback, most likely. Don't know about Dallas, but it's just the biggest slam dunk in the history of fantasy football, Greg, in terms of a rookie running back running behind this line. And who cares about Darren McFadden and Alfred Morris? I mean, they don't use this pick on Elliott and play any games. I mean, he's the guy, and he's going to do very, very well. I mean, you probably don't even have anything to add to that.
Not a thing.
And he's going to help the defense, as we all know. And that was the recipe for their 12-win season in 2014. Tony Romo threw it about 475 times. That's a low number, and they won 12 games. So that's what they're going to do this year with Ezekiel Elliott. I guess McFadden will make the team, and then Morris will just be a backup. Dak Prescott, Greg, the kid we met at the Combine, you and I together, and talked with him for a moment. He's a developmental guy, but this is intriguing. I think in, you know, in 2-3 years when Romo is done, I mean, I'd give this kid a chance to be their heir apparent if he develops. Your thoughts on Dak Prescott?
I think it's a really good spot for him. Again, he's going to get time to learn. He's going to have to play under center, which he did not do in college. But I think because they have Elliott and because of the focus of this offense, this is a really good place for him to learn. And ideally, they drafted him to be the starting quarterback. It could be this year, it could be next year, it could be in 2 years. But he was drafted to be the starting quarterback.
Let's talk New York Giants, and we'll start at their wide receiver spot because I was very, very happy with the selection of Sterling Shepard, as we talked about on the pre-draft podcast. I believe your line was he could play in the slot tomorrow. That could be needed with Victor Cruz, although Cruz is expected to be ready for camp, and we can't expect anything from Cruz. But let's assume Cruz is okay. Boy, they can line these guys up all over the formation and really press it to defenses with the versatility, right, Greg, of these guys. I mean, this could be a really nice trio.
Yeah, Shepard, 69% of his snaps last year at Oklahoma came in the slot. But there's a part of me that believes he can line up at times outside, that he's not solely a slot receiver. So I really like the player on tape. I like him as a prospect. So when the Giants took him, to me, that was a very, very good pick.
How about this backfield now? Looks like Rashad Jennings is going to be the starter. He's 31. You know, I've met him. I've interviewed him. He's a great guy. He's a lunch pail guy. He'll do anything for the team. But the Paul Perkins selection was intriguing because, let's be honest, Shane Vereen was a bit of a disappointment last year. I mean, he's a pretty good receiver, obviously, but Paul Perkins fits to me this offense. Basically, he's more dynamic, and most importantly, he's more versatile. The question, and I don't know if you have the answer, I don't know if anyone has the answer, is, you know, a year or two from now, can Paul Perkins be Tiki Barber for them? Can he be, you know, like a Jamal Charles? I believe you made that comparison.
It's a great question because he's about that size. You know, in college, I mean, last year, almost all of his runs came out of the shotgun or the pistol, but he did run NFL runs inside zone, counter, trap, power. It was just all from the gun. Now, this guy's really shifty and elusive in space. He's a make-you-miss guy, and he's 208 pounds. He doesn't have great long speed, but that's way down the list. He's got outstanding spontaneous agility, can stop and start, balance, body control. I really like this player. He improved in pass protection as the season progressed as well, so he has to continue to get better. But, yeah, he's another, you know, they drafted some juice here, and I think that, I mean, obviously Beckham has high-level juice, but they really looking to get a lot faster, quicker in their offense with Shepard and Perkins.
Let's talk Philadelphia Eagles. And obviously I don't even know if we need to talk about Carson Wentz because they don't want him to play. I do actually think he'll probably play, but you know, we'll see about Sam Bradford and all that. Yeah. Yeah. But hey, Ryan Matthews is going to be the guy, Greg, unless Wendell Smallwood, 5'10", 208 out of West Virginia can, you know, surprise us, I guess. But they're seemingly committed to Ryan Matthews. Of course, what happens when Matthews gets hurt? That's the question when you look at this backfield.
Well, you know, it's really interesting you mentioned Smallwood. You know, I hadn't had a chance to see Smallwood before the draft, and I believe it or not, I've watched him since. I've watched him after the draft because, it's Philadelphia. I do work there, and I wanted to see him. And he's ultimately – he's not a scat back type back, which I think a lot of people have that feeling about him. He's really a regular downhill runner who, you know, he runs hard and aggressively inside. He's got pretty good contact balance. He's a decisive downhill runner. He just surprisingly does not have quick change of direction. He's really kind of a downhill track runner, much more than a sudden explosive creative runner. You know, if he was 220 pounds, we'd be having a different conversation. You know, but at 208, he's not really big enough to produce to his skill set on a regular basis. He's more of a true compliment. And when you draft a guy in the fourth round, he's a compliment. So, but he's not a scat back. You know, he's not going to replace Darren Sproles. That's not the kind of player he is, although he's a very good receiver.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you pick up on any receiving skills? Because that's the book on him. And also, I don't know if you noticed anything in pass pro, but that was also the book on him. So could be a factor in the backfield, Greg, this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a little – I think they feel – you know, I think they'll feel comfortable with getting him some snaps as their regular back, not as just a package piece.
What are your thoughts if it's November 12th and the Eagles are like, all right, we're flipping the switch. We're going to Carson Wentz. It's going to have an off season at least. Granted, it's not as great as it used to be in terms of the contact the coaches have, but you've got, you know, a head coach who's a quarterback. You've got an offensive coordinator in Frank Reich, who's a quarterback. You got an O-line here that could be pretty good. They've addressed it, especially at guard. And you do have Jordan Matthews, Nelson Aguilar, Zach Ertz. That's not bad. Your thoughts on when Carson Wentz plays, if it's this year, and, you know, how can he do right out of the gate?
I think he's going to play well before November, to be honest with you, John.
Yeah,
and I think he's pretty prepared to play given what he was asked to do in college. I mean, he called pass protections. He was responsible for the run game at the line of scrimmage, calling all the checks, calling where the run would go based on the strength of the defense. So he's gone through that entire process, the critical process of pre-snap work at the line of scrimmage. That is critical, and he's been through all that.
And that's what makes it challenging for us, because we know all that, but then again, it's going to be hard for us to rank him ahead of Jared Goff, who's likely your week one starter, or latest your week two starter. But yeah, that's part of the challenge.
And hasn't done any of that, you know. So right. You're right. Goff was probably going to start week one, but he hasn't done any of those things that Carson Wentz has done.
And we discussed that on the pre-draft podcast. You're like, if you're the Rams, you want your quarterback under center and handing the ball off to Todd Gurley. Why not take Carson Wentz? But they went with Goff. Let's move on to the Redskins. And boy, the rich get richer in some ways here. And we've been kind of deliberating in the office about Kirk Cousins in terms of fantasy. The guys don't trust him. I don't either. But the guy did account for over 30 touchdowns, shockingly. And now they add Josh Doctson, who'll likely be their three, Greg. And boy, you know, with Jay Gruden's offense here, the O-line's coming along. Cousins did what he did, obviously, last year. Now you've got Doctson, Deshaun, Garcon, Jordan Reed, and we'll get to Matt Jones. Looks very intriguing on paper, and really maybe the key for Cousins to continue to ascend as opposed to kind of hitting something of a sophomore slump, if you will, even though I know it's not his second year. Your thoughts on this offense right now?
Well, I thought Doctson was a great pick. I think he fits great scheme adaptability with Jay Gruden, because there's a lot of short throws with run after catch. Doctson's terrific at that. I think the player you didn't mention who's a critical piece here is Jamison Crowder. Really good rookie season in the slot. I think he fits the classic profile of an NFL slot receiver. The big question is, can they get a run game going? Clearly, they believe in Matt Jones. I like the talent. They're really now asking him to be a true feature back. Now, In a strict sense, this offense is not necessarily built through a back, so it's not as if he's going to be asked to carry 20 times a week, but there would be some weeks where he would do that. And I think that they're counting on him to be that guy and to be able to shoulder that load.
And when I look at it from a fantasy perspective, we all know that Matt Jones can do some fine work in the passing game. He's a tough guy to bring down once he gets ahead of steam. You know, I'm thinking fantasy here, Greg. I'm thinking if the kid can stay healthy and avoid putting the ball on the ground, he's got to get 250-plus carries, and he could catch 50 balls. He could catch 50 balls. I mean, he really could be a fantasy superstar. But where's your confidence level in him in terms of being that, in terms of talent and this O-line? And I guess you have to incorporate the fumbling and the injury concerns. But, you know, how confident are you in that, Joe?
I like the player, but I can't say I'm brimming with confidence here, John. I mean, he's going to get that opportunity unless he can't do it, but he's going to get the opportunity, you know. So, but I'm not, you know, to me, it's not a given, but he's the guy.
Yeah, it's a great situation. The antenna for fantasy is up. Let's just say that.
Yes, no question. I would agree with you.
Yeah, moving on here to the Chicago Bears. They go with Leonard Floyd. They go with a guard. They actually cut Matt Slauson, so it's a little surprising here. They didn't do much of note. However, as you know, they made a very critical selection of the running back that they took in the fifth round, Jordan Howard. And this does make a ton of sense. In terms of John Fox typically likes using two running backs. And the number one question we have from your tape study on Jeremy Langford is, does he have the natural power to move the pile, you know, run through contact inside? And in Jordan Howard, Greg, they have that guy. So, I mean, it looks like a nice 1-2 punch at running back for the Bears.
Well, this was a John Fox pick. You have to think back to John Fox when he went to the Carolina Panthers in 2002. What'd they do? They traded for Steven Davis, or they signed him. And John Fox, the anomaly was his years in Denver because he had Peyton Manning. But John Fox wants to run the ball and play defense and win that way. And I don't believe they think Jeremy Langford is a true foundation back. Jordan Howard is. It would not surprise me to see Howard be the more defining runner in this offense as they go forward. Now, I can't sit here and tell you he's ready week one, but he's a competitive and sustaining back. He's an inside back. He's a grinder who gets tough yards. That's what Jordan Howard is. I think he will be their back.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm impressed with the Bears. I really am. You know, going back to last year, I thought the defense was going to be terrible. You kept telling me, you know, they may not be that bad. And now they bring in Jarrell Freeman, Danny Trevathan, pretty good linebackers here. Secondary is still an issue here, but I kind of like this team, how they're building.
Yeah, Floyd is a good pick. Jonathan Bullard's a fascinating pick, the kid from Florida in the third round who I really liked on tape. They're building now the way they want to build. I mean, this is John Fox. And I'm sure Ryan Pace, obviously the GM, is, you know, he's a major, major part of this, but they're building, you know, and again, very quick comment. Jay Cutler, as we said 1,000 times in most people's minds, the book's been written. It's over. Jay Cutler was more efficient last year. He didn't throw a lot of interceptions. Now, again, Gaze is gone. Dowell Loggins is the OC. I imagine they'll do a lot of the same things.
Yeah, Loggins was the quarterback coach last year. He's not going to change much.
Yeah, so no. And Cody Whitehair, tells me, the second round pick who will play left guard, he's a physical, tough, country strong kid, not a whole lot different than Jack Conklin. They're going to try to run the ball, and they're going to try to be physical.
I also like, for what it's worth, their pick of Braverman, the slot receiver, because, you know, Eddie Royal just...
I know. I like that kid. I watched him. He kind of reminded me of a Cole Beasley, you know, the kind of guy that has a specific role on your team but could do it really well.
So now you got probably going to have a pretty good running attack. Zach Miller, injury risk, but the kid, very athletic, did a hell of a job. Kevin White back, Alshon Jeffrey. You're going to get something out of the slot, whether it's Royal or Braverman. Hopefully Miller can stay healthy. This could be really a good offense if all goes well. I mean, that's what I mean.
Yep.
They're really building this thing up nicely. In Minnesota, we move on here, and obviously they use the number one pick on Laquon Treadwell. We've talked about Teddy quite a bit. You know, my contention, which I discussed with Paul Allen, the Vikings play-by-play voice at the combine, he agreed with me, is Teddy needs protection. He's got to have a clean pocket because he's just diminutive and he's got a sidearm low delivery. They've addressed the O-line big time. So I think the line, let's start there because I know Matt Khalil's been a disappointment, but now you've got some options. I believe TJ Clemmings is moving over to back up at left tackle, but you've got Andre Smith. You've got Sullivan back, Joe Berger. Alex Boone added from the Niners, a pretty good run blocker. Loadholt back. I mean, they're deep on the O-line and pretty talented. You know what? Let's move on to Teddy, though, because you can comment on the O-line if you'd like. But, you know, he gets a number one, a legit number one. He gets a guy with a bigger wingspan, a snatcher, a guy who can help out a quarterback. And a guy who wins in the short to intermediate area, and that's where Teddy wins. So I like that pick of Laquon Treadwell. I'm sure you did as well.
I did, and I think it fits North Turner. I think Treadwell is the classic X in a North Turner offense. You go back to the Michael Irvins, the Michael Westbrooks, the Vincent Jacksons, all X's in North Turner's offense. That guy is – they don't have to be fast. They don't have to run by people. They've got to be able to run the intermediate route tree really well, a lot of deep digs, a lot of bang eights, those kinds of throws. Treadwell can do that. And I think that's what they're looking to do. I think Treadwell fits exactly what North Turner wants to do on offense.
Let's go to the Lions. Let's talk about the Detroit Lions. And they continue to address the O-line, which, you know, I kind of like for fantasy. I thought they'd get a wide receiver of note, but they don't do that. But I'm pretty convinced, Greg, now that Stafford is basically in year two with Jim Bob Cooter. We all know how Joe Lombardi worked out early on, not well. And, you know, you look at the numbers here, Stafford threw under Jim Bob Cooter, 17 touchdown passes, one pick. Now you had Taylor Decker. along with Riley Reiff. It may not be a dominant left tackle group, but those are two number one picks. So is
they
Lake
drafted
Tomlinson.
Three offensive linemen, John. They drafted three offensive linemen, so that was a priority. They felt that that was the most important thing to do. And you made a great point about Stafford. He ended up having a very good season last year. He was far more efficient when Jim Bob Cooter came in, and I think the arrow's pointing up for Stafford within this offense. And I think they're pretty comfortable with their receivers. And the player, you know, we don't need to go over the obvious guys. I think the player, in my view, who could emerge this year is T.J. Jones. He came out of Notre Dame. I think he's a really solid possession type, third receiver. I think he's going to get an opportunity here, and I think he could be the guy to emerge.
I've been giving him some love, Greg, actually, since February, because I remember your note about him 2 years ago. You felt he was like the best route runner of that draft class out of Notre Dame, and they don't bring in another wide receiver. I think what they're going to do is spread the ball around. It'll be Tate, it'll be Jones, Marvin Jones, and then another wideout, likely TJ. But to me, the guy to watch is Ebron. You gotta
I agree.
If you're yeah, it's gotta be Ebron. I thought in September last year, he looked good. I thought he really flashed. I don't know if that was just a handful of players or what, but that's a big one here. But overall, are you confident in this supporting cast at the skill positions? Because also at running back, now you're like, okay, what are we doing here? Is it Stephen Ridley going to be a guy that gets 175 carries along with Abdullah and Theo Riddick catching the ball? I mean, that's a big question. They also drafted Dwayne Washington. So the backfield to me, Greg, is still kind of an open question here in Detroit.
I think they would like it to be Abdullah. That would be my sense of it for sure. So, you know, but Ebron, I agree with you. But this is now going to be a shorter, quicker passing game, and I think that that's the way they want to play now. The ball's going to come out. They shored up their O-line. I like what they've done.
Green Bay Packers, not a ton going on here for fantasy, but they do use a second-round pick on a tackle, and they did have a ton of injuries last year with Sitton was hurt. Balaga, so you got some depth here, but they don't draft a tight end, so that's okay news, because you know you've got a couple of guys here. I'm not looking at Jared Cook. I'm not falling for Jared Cook, but he'll be impactful here for the offense. They still do have Richard Rodgers, but I guess the one thing, Greg, is they didn't draft a running back. And knowing what Eddie Lacy did last year, people are going to be a little down on him, but he's in shape. He's doing the P90X stuff, Greg. And, you know, we're talking about in the office, Eddie Lacy's going to get the ball behind a pretty good O-line with Aaron Rodgers and a receiver group that's going to be better than last year for sure. Obviously, Jordy Nelson's back. You know, I think Eddie Lacy's going to be in good shape here, Greg, in a contract year. They didn't draft a back. I thought that was something of an endorsement for Edward Lacy.
Well, they want him, look, his first 2 years, he was a very good runner. And last year, we know the reasons why, or why not, as I should say. They still have Starks, who's a really nice piece here. They have a great screen game. Starks is a master at it. No, this offense, and they get Jordy back. No, this is the big issue here is what happens with Davante Adams. Because we've all liked his talent. He really hasn't emerged. He struggled against man coverage to get open. He had that stretch where they kept throwing him the ball last year and with very few completions. So at some point, he's either going to have to become better, or you're going to see the more of the Jared Aberderises, the Ty Montgomerys, who showed flashes last year before he got hurt.
They may cut him. He may not make the team, Greg, Davante Adams, because I think go ahead.
I was going to say that's possible because, you know, it depends on the development of these younger guys.
Yeah, because when you have Aberderis, who can play the slot, and Ty Montgomery, who can play the slot, and Jeff Janis, who's pretty damn good backup for Jordy, you know, they don't even really need Davante Adams. And I asked Mike McCarthy about Ty Montgomery at the combine. Boy, he was effusive in his praise. I couldn't believe it. He was, like, really impressed with the kid. And look, makes sense. He got on the field very early for the Packers last year. Granted, some of it by necessity, but that's kind of rare when you're a wideout, a rookie getting on the field with Aaron Rodgers. So, and we'll see. And by the way, Greg, here's an interesting tidbit for you. They drafted a kid They signed a kid, D3 kid, out of Wesley College, who threw for over 5,000 yards and 55 touchdown passes. They signed him as an undrafted free agent. Now, he's a long shot at quarterback, but interestingly enough, Greg, he was my son's quarterback in Pee Wee football. My son was his tight end and also his running back. And I actually helped coach a kid in Little League. So a little surreal for me, Greg, the kid I coached.
So now we know the reason. Now we know the reason that he made it, because you coached him.
No, it has nothing to do with that whatsoever. I'm still shocked. I'm still shocked. So my son, his first reception when he was 10 years old as a tight end was like an 18-yard pass. And I was sitting on the sideline talking to someone, and then the ball's in the air, and I look, and then it's to my son, and he caught it, and he ran after the catch a little bit. And I ran down the sideline screaming because I was so shocked. The kid who threw that pass to him is now on the Packers, so I'm a little blown away.
There you go.
We'll see. His name's Joe Callahan, so good luck to Joe Callahan, and hopefully I wouldn't put a pass to kid to make the practice squad. I'll say that. The kid's unbelievable. Tough as nails. Moving on to Atlanta, though, more importantly here, Greg, and as we move along, and they used the pick on Austin Hooper, only a third-round pick, 81 overall, but they took him over a couple of intriguing tight ends. Yet, look, they took him, Greg. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on him being able to transition to a pro-style offense quickly? It's a tough spot for a tight end, but I did actually ask Hooper about playing for Stanford. Is that an advantage? Absolutely, because they do a lot of stuff at Stanford,
yes.
Replicating the –
Well, they're looking for a tight end who can be a receiver here. I mean, he's not a great blocker, by the way. Even though he played in an offense that ran a lot and he lined up as a line of scrimmage tight end, he's not a great blocker. But I think they see him as a receiver since Gonzalez left. They haven't had that comfortable receiver for Matt Ryan. And I don't think Matt Ryan had one of his best years last year. I thought he struggled a bit with the play-action stuff as the season progressed. I think he didn't get a clear picture. He made some bad decisions in the red zone in particular. But, you know, Hooper's going to get an opportunity. They need a tight end to be a receiver, and they don't really have a good one. I mean, Tammy is a solid pro. He's been doing it a long time, but obviously he's not the answer, and they know that.
We can skip Carolina because we're running out of time, and they didn't draft a skill player of note here. So we can move on to the New Orleans Saints, and it's another piece here for Drew Brees. I feel like they've kind of reloaded nicely at wide receiver, at least. Colston is gone. Now you've got Cooks. You've got a Willie Snead. Also, you've got Kobe Fleener in the mix here, and certainly he's a little frustrating, but very athletic. Good red zone threat. And now Michael Thomas out of Ohio State, second-round pick, 6'3", 212. So he gives them size. That was needed. But the question, Greg, is can Michael Thomas – be a guy who lines up in the slot? Can he be a little bit Colston-esque for the Saints?
Well, that's how I saw this pick. I don't think Michael Thomas is ready to be an outside receiver in the NFL. I think that he's Marcus Colston right now. I think that's the way they'll see him. You know, don't forget, you can say what you want, but Willie Snead caught 69 balls last year. So Michael Thomas, to me, will be more of a slot guy right now. Now, with Sean Payton, you never know because there's so much movement. And certainly Kobe Fleener gives you a lot of options. Kobe Fleener gives you the Jimmy Graham options in terms of where he lines up. So Thomas could also line up in a number of places. But again, he's a rookie. That means he has to learn different positions. I'm not so sure that'll happen that early. So I think he's going to be more of an inside slot guy.
Speaking of Fleener, he scares me a little bit, but I did initial projections for him in this offense, and boy, he came out high on the list, Greg. It almost feels like it has to be done. You're talking Breeze, you're talking Peyton, you're talking a big-time need, and you're talking about a guy in Fleener. He's a good red zone threat. I mean, would you be surprised at all if Kobe Fleener had like 13 touchdown receptions this year, Greg?
I don't know if I'd be surprised. I think ultimately with Breeze, I mean, Breeze is really good. I mean, you know, he had stretches where we think he's losing it and he's still a really good quarterback. So no, I guess I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. It's just Fleener himself. It scares you a little bit. You know, although, you know, I went back and looked, cause he's had a couple of high profile drops you know, where he hears footsteps. But I actually went back and looked. His catch rate is actually quite good over the last couple of years. So maybe we're being a little too hard on Kobe Fleener. We are up to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and not a ton going on here either, actually. They go all defense here, so we could probably skip them, and we won't even talk about the fact that it took a kicker in round number two. And we can move on here to the NFC West, and we'll talk – well, I guess we'll talk Jared Goff here. Actually, you know what? I'm going to surprise it and ask you this question. Is Pharoh Cooper, like, immediately their best receiver? I look at Pharoh Cooper. I think that kid's going to play quickly for the Rams.
Yeah, well, I would never say a rookie is immediately a best receiver, at this point, a fourth-round pick. But I like Pharoh Cooper. I think that he's got a multiple skill set. He kind of reminded me a little bit of Golden Tate, that he's built that way. He's almost built like a running back, as Tate is. And he's very good on short throws. He's very good run after catch. He's got an explosive element to his run after catch ability. They've added a lot of players here. They actually added another receiver who I really liked on film as a third day selection. And that's another Michael Thomas, this one from Southern Mississippi, and they drafted him in the sixth round. So the two receivers they drafted, I really liked as prospects.
Jared Goff going to be the guy, going to be asked to hand it off to Todd Gurley. Do you have any thoughts on Jared Goff? Maybe talk about the O-line. They've got some players here, Greg Robinson, Saffold, Havenstein. You know, it's a work in progress.
Well,
what are your
thoughts on Goff? Yeah, prior to this draft, John, the last two drafts, I believe they had taken eight offensive linemen. They also drafted tight end this year, Tyler Higbee, who's had some off the field issues, but I think he's a very good receiving tight end prospect. Look, I think we know what they're going to do. They're going to hand the ball off to Gurley. They're going to try to work Goff in slowly. They're going to try to define the throws for him with the run game and the play action pass game. And they're going to hope that their defense keeps everything close and that Goff can do what Joe Flacco did as a rookie, by NFL standards, not throw many balls and be able to be, you know, functionally efficient.
Not much going on with the Arizona Cardinals. They do use fourth round pick on a center. I don't know if you studied that kid Boehm out of Missouri.
I did.
But
Evan Boehm.
Boehm, yeah, I don't know much about him, but it sounds like he may start and upgrade the O-line.
Yeah, he's a very solid player. One of those, you know, centers, you know, usually don't get a lot of love leading up to the draft. It's not a sexy position, but he could easily step in and start. He's that kind of player. Other than that, I mean, they're pretty set at their skill position players. There's probably not a whole lot to say.
Well, they do. Also, they take Jake Coker, for what it's worth. I mean, is that, to me, I mean, to you, is that an upgrade over Matt Barkley?
I think it's the kind of quarterback that Bruce Arians likes, a big kid, pretty good arm, not a gun, but a good arm. Maybe they feel that he can be a developmental guy behind, you know, Carson and see where he goes down the road. He was a big, big-time recruit coming out of high school. You know, he's one of those 6'5 kids, pocket guy with pretty good movement, totally developmental.
Fascinating team here, though, Greg. The Niners with Chip Kelly, they take DeForest Buckner in the first. They take, a lot of people thought it was a reach, Joshua Garnett, offensive guard out of Stanford. I kind of liked it for Carlos Hyde because he's a big run blocker. But down the line, Greg, they take some intriguing guys here, starting in round six, pick 207. Let's start with Jeff Driskel. I know you were intrigued by him big time, the talent, the improvement at Louisiana Tech, and a lot of people feel like he's probably a good fit for this offense, thus the draft pick. I mean, Jeff Driskel play this year? I would not rule that out.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6'4", 235. He has movement. He did a smart thing by going to La Tech. He rehabilitated his throwing. I thought, you know, I talked about it. I thought he was a very intriguing day three prospect. And I think it's a good spot for him with this offense. The other player who's really intriguing to me is Kelvin Taylor, Fred Taylor's son, another sixth-round pick, who I thought had the quickest feet of any running back in this draft.
Yeah, and I think that he could potentially slide right into the backup spot behind Carlos Hyde. I mean, they drafted Mike Davis out of South Carolina. I think they like him. That's going to be a competition to watch out for because they're both basically what we call in the fantasy business handcuffs to Carlos Hyde, who's got some availability issues. Otherwise, we're not excited about DeJuan Harris, Sean Drawn, Kendall Gaskins. Forget it. It's all Taylor versus Davis behind Hyde in 2016 at the running back position. And also a guy who may not be bursting with athleticism, but Aaron Burbridge was a major playmaker for Michigan State, Greg. And, you know, this receiving corps is really, really thin here. Quentin Patton, Bruce Ellington. I mean, I've turned the page on those guys already. I've never liked Torrey Smith. To me,
no,
I'm looking at Burbridge and go ahead, Greg.
I thought Burbridge, to me, I saw some similarities with Burbridge to someone like Doug Baldwin. And then keep in mind, Baldwin was an undrafted free agent, and he's coming off a great year, so people might think, oh, Doug Baldwin. Well, you know, Doug Baldwin was undrafted, and, Burbridge, to me, showed some similarities.
And there's a kid named DeAndre Smelter who's intriguing. We'll have to watch out for him.
I was going to mention that name because he is a big, big kid who came out of Georgia Tech with a knee injury, and he's someone to watch. I think they might view him. He's going to get opportunities. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he was shocking. Like, I think he was a fourth-round pick last year. Now, it's a new regime and all that. He was a former baseball player. He had an ACL, as you mentioned there. But they took him pretty high last year. He's athletic, very athletic. He's probably the most talented wideout on the roster. I mean, maybe Jerome Simpson, who's talented, but who knows if he's going to stick. But, yeah, it was a pretty intriguing draft overall for the San Francisco 49ers. And we are up to – did we cover every team here in this draft?
We did not do Seattle.
Oh, right, Seattle. That is it. And Seattle – well, Seattle, and the big question there and for our purposes is, okay, now what's up with the backfield? With the drafting of C.J. Procise and Alex Collins.
Alex Collins, and they re-signed Christian Michael.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Procise is going to have to do it in the passing game because Rawls,
yes,
you know, he's caught like 30 balls in his life outside of high school. So your thoughts on C.J. Procise, can he – I kind of find it a little hard to believe with Seattle and Pete Carroll, because we really haven't seen it all that much. You know, last year with Fred Jackson, fine, but Fred Jackson's a savvy veteran. Can a guy like C.J. Procise step in here and carve out a role quickly as a receiving specialist behind Thomas Rawls?
Well, I think that's the plan. He was a third-round pick. He came to Notre Dame as a receiver. That's his skill set. I think they would hope that he could do that. They give him a defined role and let him work on that, and he could be the receiving back, and that would be the goal in mind. I guess the interesting pick to me was Alex Collins because Rawls is coming off a pretty major injury, and, you know, you just don't know. When a guy has that kind of injury, plus he's such a hard runner, he may not be able to withstand the punishment running like that.
If Rawls went down, Michael may get the first crack. But between
Correct.
Procise and between Procise and Collins, it sounds like you would lean to Collins as being the better option if we're looking to replace Rawls.
Early on, I think Procise down the road. But early on, I think Alex Collins would be the better guy.
Well, that's it, Greg. This was great. This was a very good podcast. If you're listening to this, if you've heard the entire podcast, we've been on here for 90 minutes, boy. You want to talk about some knowledge. Been dropping it here for an hour and a half, and we're going to be working on our player profiles. We got a ton of work to do here, and I'm not exactly sure when the next time podcast, but sir, we'll talk with you tomorrow. Follow Greg on Twitter @GregCosell. And he'll continue to be a strong contributor here at fantasyguru.com for 2016. That'll wrap it up. The post-draft podcast for Greg Cosell. I'm John Hanson. We'll talk to you next time.